The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a two-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, it had eight legs, had muscles in the box, and it's gone. Yes, it's this week's Carling Cup round. Still, we relive today the magic midweek moments in the Carling Cup, like Man United Wolves and Newcastle Arsenal. Look out, leagues. Have the Gunners got a goalie? We look forward too to the weekend's big matches in the Premier League. Spurs at Old Trafford, Arsenal West Ham, Wolves Man City. Get the verdict on the Ballon d'Or list. There's a Sid-style reporter, possibly in Madrid, and that exciting Blackburn takeover tale. Indian chicken farmer offers poultry reinforcements, not worried about pecking order. All that plus your posts and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yes, hello everyone. Excitingly enough, on board the Football Weekly pod today, we have Michael Cox of zonalmarking.net.
Yeah, you got it right. Thank you, James. Hello.
It's what I do. I get things right, Michael. Lovely to have you back.
Thank you.
Warm response to your last appearance.
Pleased to hear it. It's difficult second album time now, isn't it?
Very much so, very much so. Simon Burnton, warm response to your last appearance, including a poster saying I was disappointed. You tell the tale.
Oh, well, there was indeed a poster there who said that I sounded very good, but he thought I sounded like a black person. And when he Googled me, I turned out not to be, and that was a little bit disappointing for him.
All right. Imagine that the other way around, eh?
What?
Well, if they had said I was disappointed because he sounded like a white man, he turned out to be black. And yet, it's fine for him to say it that way around. It's wrong, isn't it?
I'm not offended.
It's political incorrectness gone mad. Barry Glendinning, no disappointment for your last appearance at all. Everyone knew exactly what they were getting, and they got it.
Yeah.
And they were delighted by that. James Dart, Michael, was intrigued by your post the other day about how if you properly plan out your weekend, there is a 20-minute window of no football on TV that you can get all your eating and washing done in.
Yeah, on Sunday, I think between 11 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock at night, you could watch football continuously. But Did you? Not quite, and I managed to miss all the interesting events, like the PSV Feyenoord game.
Really?
I watched until it was 2-0 and Feyenoord got a man sent off, and then I missed eight further goals.
Myself and James were wondering this morning if Michael...
James Dart?
Sees everything, like, you know, the final battle scene in The Matrix and Neo, just everything becomes a sort of streaming green digital numbers twirling around a black background. And we thought Michael might see things like that, except chalkboards instead of numbers.
Hmm?
I'm slightly disappointed. I thought he'd have a big long beard and really long fingernails, but he's quite clean-shaven,
very
normal-looking young man.
Maybe next time, if I get a third.
He is wearing a full Jedi outfit.
Didn't you get the memo, Simon?
It's our Halloween special, yeah. Fancy dress.
Now, on to the football. Hmm? And all sorts of excitement awaiting us this weekend. In particular, that game at Old Trafford, Man United coming up against Spurs. Arsenal, Man City and United all tied at the moment, 5 points behind Chelsea at the top of the table. Man United last weekend got their second win in six attempts. But midweek, they followed that up with a last-minute win against Wolves in the Carling Cup. Now, it was the Carling Cup, so I'm not sure how much importance we should attach to this, except for the fact that, once again, that man Chicharito, as in the Premier League, as in the Champions League, has proved the man to pull their fat from the bacon. Their fat from the fire. They save their bacon, indeed.
That's, as you said to Michael in the intro, yeah. You always get it right.
That's right.
And obviously at the weekend he scored one stunning goal. He's got that knack, as Michael Owen says in an interview in today's newspaper, in the Thursday's newspaper, that Owen has identified in Hernandez, that kind of killer finisher instinct.
Is he the new Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Well, he does kind of look like it. He's that fresh-faced, young, boyish goal-scorer chap.
Yeah.
Everyone needs one.
And he's also quite similar to Michael Owen when he was younger, I think, both because he is a natural goal poacher, which United arguably haven't had a natural pure finisher since Van Nistelrooy left. I mean, they tried to convert Rooney into that role last season. He did very well. But it looks like he might play a little bit around the place. And he's also, according to official FIFA stats, he was the fastest player at the World Cup. And obviously Owen's game was entirely based around pace when he was younger. Now he's lost pace and he's not particularly useful.
He scored 6 goals in his last 5 appearances, which you have to be impressed by.
It was an interesting game on Wednesday because the first half was absolutely dire, really, really bad. I did the minute by minute, and at half time I was very tempted just to put on my coat and go home because I was so fed up with it. But the second half...
I did,
because I'm a good pro like that. And it really perked up in the second half, turned into a really rattling good game of football. Bebe played. It was interesting to see what he would be like, because obviously the reports from the training ground, or rumours anyway, had suggested that he could barely run in a straight line without falling over. But he was one of the better players on the field for Manchester United. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he showed some quite good touches, and he scored a goal. So it was a slightly fortuitous goal. I thought it might be taken off him, but he's been credited with it, and so he's done something not many people do, score a goal for Manchester United. He'll always have that if things don't work out for him.
Indeed.
And then the other younger players, Gabriel Obertan, he looked like he's got a bright future ahead of him. Federico Maqueda, I thought, was very, very poor. Possibly trying too hard. Chris Smalling played and played well, and then Darren Gibson was maybe the other, you know, young prospect, and he was good in spots. He put the through ball over the top for Chicharito's goal at the end. But yeah, he was okay, middling enough.
All right, interesting. Are you on duty for Spurs' visit to Old Trafford this weekend?
I think I'm going to be in a car travelling from Oxford to London when that game is on.
Right.
Sounds
like a treat.
I'll probably have to listen to it on the radio and watch it later.
What kind of thing do you think Barry will be hearing, Michael?
Well, I think it should be quite an interesting game, actually, depending on what system Ferguson uses. I think Tottenham will probably play Van der Vaart in the hole behind Crouch. I think United could have problems with that. I still think United are a central midfielder short this season, and I think that when they play just 2 central midfielders, they do have a tendency to be overrun slowly in the centre of the pitch. But Tottenham have got a terrible record at Old Trafford. I'm sure that this fixture happens more than once a season, because we all seem to say that more than once a season, that Tottenham do have a terrible record at Old Trafford. But it's 2 draws and 0 victories in 18 games, which is just incredibly bad.
They last won in Old Trafford in 1989 when your mucker Les Ferdinand was playing. I think a young man called Gary Lineker scored the winner.
Really? Interesting.
I think that Tottenham are no closer to winning the league, really, than they were last year. I don't think they feel particularly close to overhauling Chelsea. But I do think that their fans are... They do feel close to overhauling Manchester United. And that this is... A potentially key game. If they do manage, for all their poor record at Old Trafford, if they do manage to get something out of this game, it'll be very encouraging for them, but also really a poor sign for what looks like a less good team than most recent ones at Manchester United.
At Manchester United, who have just got a victory, but that was only their second in 6 Premier League games.
Yeah, against Stoke, they were fairly fortunate to win. They could well have drawn that. Against Wolves, for all that they made lots of changes, they were fairly fortunate to win, could well have drawn that.
I'm getting more Chinese from you, I have to say, Simon.
Take whatever you want.
Right, okay.
United may not look as impressive as they have in recent years, but they're still unbeaten this season. And Spurs haven't beaten them in 9 years, nearly 10 years.
Didn't you just say 1989?
No, that's at Old Trafford. Oh, but Spurs haven't beaten them at all in any competition.
Oh, all right.
Unless Spurs fans will point to that famous Pedro Mendes goal that was disallowed when Roy Carroll sort of sweeped it from behind the line. But the fact of the matter is they lost that game too, or drew, whatever, I can't remember. But United really have the wood on them, but this is probably as good a chance as Spurs have had in a very long time beat them.
You don't sound overly optimistic, though, any of you, about Spurs' chances.
If I was betting on the game, I wouldn't bet a huge amount, and I wouldn't bet it on Spurs either. But that's not to say they won't win.
Indeed it isn't. Okay, in the meantime, Arsenal are going to be taking on West Ham in an intriguing all-London affair. Arsenal on a bit of a roll. They beat Man City 3-0 at Eastlands last weekend. Midweek, a 4-0 victory over Newcastle. It was, though, the Carling Cup. It was against Newcastle's second-string defence. So how much importance should we attach to Theo Walcott's brace? Goal by Nicholas Bentner as well.
I think overall the game is not of significant importance. You can't use last night's Carling Cup match to analyse their chance this season. But they will, however, be celebrating Theo Walcott's return to fitness. He was looking really good at the start of the season in August, providing something of a goal threat. Alan Hansen famously, Walcott scored a hat-trick and Hansen criticised his lack of football brain. And he scored two good goals last night. I thought he took them good? Nicely.
Was one of them not offside?
Well,
massively so.
His part in the two goals he scored last night was impressive.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. That, in that way, they were good goals.
Okay. Equally important for Arsenal, the fact that they seem to have uncovered a top-class goalie somewhere in a cupboard back at the Emirates Stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. A really good performance at the back last night, and needed it as well. For 4-0 looks like an extremely convincing scoreline, but there was one very, very lucky own goal. A couple of decisions went their way. It could have been very different, and had they not kept that clean sheet in the first half, then who knows?
There's a lot of people at Arsenal who believe that Szczesny is actually a
is
very...
Is that how you say it?
I believe so.
Okay, Szczesny.
Something like that.
All right, excellent.
But there's a lot of people at Arsenal that do feel he is very talented and does have the potential to step up and be the first-choice goalkeeper this season. He's a very popular figure there. And this is just a strange incident involving him. It's not really relevant. But in November 2008, he broke both arms in a training ground accident because he picked up weights that were too heavy and apparently didn't have the right footwear on and broke both arms at the same time. So... quite remarkable to come back to that.
What was the influence of the footwear?
I think because he slipped and the weights were too heavy at the same time.
Right. But as you say, he is as hotly tipped as a man who takes a leak after chopping chilies or something like that. Anyway, Barry. But no, good. Well done to them. They take on West Ham, who got a win themselves, actually, against Stoke.
Well, I was taking delivery of a wardrobe last night, so I was also listening to that match in the car. And from the sort of hour I... Yes?
Well, if you were taking delivery of the wardrobe, why were you in a car? Is it being installed in your car?
No, the wardrobe... Mrs. Baz had bought a wardrobe from somebody on the internet.
Right.
And she was going to collect it, and I had to go along to make sure she didn't get murdered by some stranger masquerading as a wardrobe salesman.
Right, okay.
And I'm not quite sure what good she thought I would be or what help I'd be if someone pulled a knife on her and I'd have just
run, screamed
like a girl. But
the wardrobe was consigned safely?
Yes, we took delivery of the wardrobe from a very nice German man who sort of reminded me of Rafa Honigstein.
Right. Let's get on to the other big fixture in your...
Oh, yeah, sorry. But from what I heard on the radio, West Ham were dismal against Stoke, but then... Between getting out of the car and arriving back in the house, they'd pull back an equaliser and went on to win 3-1.
Well, they have only had one defeat now in seven games, I believe, in all competitions, West Ham. You have to be impressed by that, although they remain rooted to the bottom of the table, West Ham, and pressure continues to hang over Avram Grant's head or on his shoulders or wherever it is. Pressure collects.
Well, there's our occasional podcasting colleague, Jacob Steinberg, who's a huge West Ham fan. I noticed he was social networking, a frenzy of social networking last night, and he was criticising Stoke and seemed to think that West Ham had now turned the corner.
All right.
But I'd say they'll reverse back around it as soon as they come up against Arsenal at the weekend. Mm.
Newcastle, in the meantime, beaten so convincingly by Arsenal in the midweek game, are going to be up against Sunderland. That is a very big game. Hey, Barry.
It is a huge game. North East Derby, obviously. Newcastle trying to reclaim their position as top dogs in the North East because Sunderland had laid claim to that sort of exalted position at the moment.
Sunderland are up in seventh place, but they and everybody below them are within a defeat of the relegation zone.
But Sunderland are seventh, Newcastle are ninth, so you know, there's very little in it. There's been a lot of talk around Newcastle this week about Chris Hughton's future. they release a statement saying that he will be their manager for the foreseeable and that he's going to be offered a proper contract. He's actually the lowest paid manager in the Premier League. Even he gets less than Ian Holloway at Blackpool.
How much do you get?
I believe he gets 250 grand a year.
All right.
So he's working for a pair of idiots in Mike Ashley and Derek Lambius, but he seems to have got a decent team together, fostered a good team spirit there, and he deserves a chance. I would imagine Sunderland will win this game and probably win it quite easily.
Do you?
But it's going to be interesting, particularly when Lee Cattermole and Joey Barton get stuck into each other in midfield. A lot could hinge on which one of those loses the rag first. They have previous Cattermole, when he was a Wigan player, put Barton out of the game for 2 months with a fairly nasty challenge. So, yeah, that could get quite tasty. But interestingly, I believe it's not a sellout yet anyway, or it wasn't yesterday. There's still tickets available, so, which is kind of depressing. I don't know if that's a reflection on lack of interest up there or just a reflection on the expensive ticket prices and the times we're living in when people don't have much money to spend.
Have you ever been to Sunderland, actually?
I've been several times.
All right, okay.
I was in Niall Quinn's Range Rover in Sunderland once.
Do tell, Barry.
There's not much to tell.
Was he there at the time or not?
No, I didn't.
Were you
steal
picking
it.
Up a chest of drawers or what?
I was driving to Kevin Nolan's house to set fire to Andy Carroll's Range Rover because his Range Rover was nicer than Niall Quinn's. So we hatched a scheme to commit an act of arson so that Niall Quinn would have the nicest Range Rover in the Northeast. And we daubed some obscenities on the garage door just to throw the scent on someone else.
Right, that's it for part one. Coming up in part two, we're going to be dialing up Sid for an interesting telephonic experiment and to hear some things about Spanish football too. And we'll be discussing all sorts of other bits and pieces as well.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Hello.
Sid, what was going on Monday? Who was he?
I have no idea what was going on Monday because I'd sent in some body double to do the pod for me. Apparently he wasn't very good.
No, he was excellent. That's the thing.
For future reference, next time you're trying to choose an imposter for a radio broadcast, get a voice double rather than a body double.
All right, yeah.
That's true. Body double's probably not a lot of good, yeah.
Yeah, nice to have you back in you know, real Sid. It was. Did you hear it back, Sid? It really sounded different.
No, I haven't actually heard it yet. No, I must admit though, it's something that I've sort of experienced before because of doing commentaries and stuff. That depending on the quality of the microphone you're using, and depending on how high you've got the levels in the headsets and stuff like that, your own voice does sound very, very different.
But you're sounding comfortingly bad now, which is excellent, because we want to ask you about lots of things. For example, how about this? Slim Pickens, the remarkable goal celebration involving players getting into a car. Bobeto Griezmann's driving celebration. On the website where I first saw that, they said it was his tribute to Sebastian Loeb winning the Rally Catalunya. Sid, tell us a little bit more about this incident, and was it an extraordinary product placement?
Brilliant, wasn't it? Basically, Real Sociedad play in a stadium that's got a running track, and because of one of their sponsorship deals, and this actually reminds me a lot, I don't know if you remember back in the old days before there was a hotel and all the rest of it, at Stamford Bridge there used to be two kind of great big gravel bits at the end of the pitch before the stands, and there was always cars parked on there as well, whether they were cars that were just parked because it was a pretty handy parking space or whether they were there because of sponsorship, I don't know. But at Real Sociedad, they have a couple of their sponsors' cars on the running track just off the edge of the pitch. And what happened on Monday night was that after Griezmann scored the goal, he ran off towards this car, opened the door, got in behind the wheel and pretended to beep beep as a couple of his team piled on board. He said he'd been planning it. I must confess, I hadn't heard the suggestion that it's in honour of some winning rally driver thingamajig, but it was certainly pretty good.
Did he get booked?
You know what? Off the top of my head, I don't know. I don't think he did, because I think I'm right in... the referee was presumably not sure what to do because he didn't take off his shirt or do anything like that. So I'm not honestly sure if he got booked or not. I really hope not. Right. There was a case a couple of weeks ago where Callejon from Espanyol was booked for removing his shirt and revealing a picture of Puerta underneath. Of course, Antonio Puerta, who died of heart problems a few years ago. Dani Jarque it was. And he was given a yellow card for that. And the committee took it back because they thought the referee basically had been a heartless bastard, which, of course, he had been.
Right, OK, ironically enough. But it's very topical, this. Jimmy Mack, commentator commenting on, and Dirk as well, commenting on the story you were telling us about on Monday of the latest player to collapse, Manuel Garcia, no? And the remarkably high incidence in the Spanish league, and the fact that this seems to be specifically a Spanish problem. This is something, I know we were talking about this yesterday, but this is something that the Spanish press, that they haven't come up with any real answers as to why that might be. Is that right?
That is right, and it's something actually that I've been trying to get to the bottom of myself for the last couple of days. I've literally about 10 minutes before you called just come off the phone from a doctor from one of the first division clubs in Spain, asking him about some of these things. And if you look at the number of immediate deaths, or as they're known as sudden deaths in Spain based on heart problems, one in the 70s, two in the 80s, one in the 90s, and in the 2000s, there's already been seven of them. And certainly that's something that provokes all sorts of questions. And the Rayo Vallecano manager, Pepe Mel, was saying that he couldn't understand why, and that it seemed to him that something was going on that didn't used to be going on. Lots of people, of course, as you can imagine, have floated the idea of does this imply some sort of drugs use? It seems not. The people, I mean, obviously, I don't know enough about medicine to be able to give a proper opinion without asking the opinions of others. The people I've been speaking to think that this is partly just a statistical anomaly. Partly it is that perhaps the tests in Spain are not quite as strict and as severe as they are elsewhere. For example, in Italy, where the test picked up the heart complaints that Nwankwo Kanu had and that Fadiga had and a couple of other players. And certainly it's something that people are asking a lot of questions about. I think that what we're talking about more than anything else in Spain, if they have a thing in this, is that there's perhaps a slight lack of seriousness from football clubs rather than from the doctors themselves, in that it's not always cardiologists who do the tests. In some cases, the tests don't go far enough back in terms of looking into family histories. But it also does seem to be something that in truth, not a huge amount can be done about. And what really can be done is that now all clubs are obliged to have this pack, which includes a defibrillator, which they had at the weekend, which is why the player himself was able to survive in the end, because he was rescued, Miguel Garcia, because of the fact that he used a defibrillator on the pitch which managed to restart his heart after 25 seconds.
Mm, thank goodness. All right, now in happier news in Spain, the Ballon d'Or features plenty of the World Cup winning team, and there's a lot of confidence, even though the English bookies have got Wesley Sneijder in as the favourite. There's a lot of confidence in the Spanish press, as far as I can see, that it's going to be one of the Barcelona crew. Is that right?
It's quite interesting the way it's slightly tilted, this argument. To start with, at least, when the assumption was that it would be Wesley, the Spanish were, I say the Spanish, that's perhaps a little unfair, big chunks of the Spanish media anyway were campaigning for it to be Andrés Iniesta because of the winning goal in the World Cup final. I think there's become a recognition since then, as they've looked into it, that perhaps Andrés Iniesta is not quite as strong a candidate as Xavi Hernández, and it seems that Xavi Hernández now is the person who's got the most weight behind him, certainly more than Iniesta and Iker Casillas, who are the other two Spanish candidates. It's true that they believe that Wesley Sneijder has a strong case, but I think they now think that he's not as strong as one of them, and that if a Spaniard doesn't win it in the year that Spain won the World Cup, that then basically they've got no chance, and this is all a big fix, and it's very unfair. But I do think that now there's, as I say, a slight tilting of the argument, because it's now in favour of Xavi Hernández, whereas before it was in favour of Andrés Iniesta. I've seen the list, by the way, and there's a couple of big names for me that aren't on it. I find it hard to believe that Diego Milito is not on the list, given that he scored the key goal in the Coppa Italia in the Champions League final, and of course got all those goals in the Italian League. And I think it's absolutely absurd that Gerard Piqué is not on the list. As far as I can see, to be perfectly honest, deserves it more than Andrés Iniesta does.
Sid, sorry, this is slightly off topic, but and I don't know if we've ever asked you this before, but has Raúl been, is he bitter about the fact that Spain have won so much with him not being involved?
That's a good question. I mean, I suppose in a way you'd think he would be, and he'd be entitled to be. What he said publicly has been completely reversed. Of course, publicly it's very, very pleased for the Spanish national team. I suspect privately, I wouldn't go so far as to say bitter, but I suspect he's probably pretty frustrated. He may well be looking, and this is, of course, an issue that's become quite live recently because of David Villa equaling his record as top scorer in history for Spain. He may well be looking at it thinking, God, if only I'd been in a slightly different generation. His detractors would say that Spain improved precisely at the moment when they got rid of him. I think that would probably be a little bit harsh, but it is true that was an important generational change that needed to be made. And I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. But Raul is, for all the other things that are levelled at Raul, and there's quite a lot of them, Raul is, at least publicly and in terms of the message that he puts out, is impeccably mannered and impeccably polite about this kind of thing. And he has insisted that, of course, he's very, very pleased for Spain to have won the World Cup. Mind you, he couldn't really say anything else, I suppose.
Sid, brilliant stuff. Thank you very much for that. And we'll catch up with you on Monday.
And if I can't make it, I'll send the other guy along.
Fantastic. The good news for the Spanish, the fact that in World Cup years, in years where there is a World Cup, in 5 of the last 7 occasions, the Ballon d'Or has come from the winning team. So looks like being a Spaniard then. Post Ascuar says, disappointed on Monday there was no mention of FC United of Manchester's amazing run into the first round of the FA Cup. David Conn did a great piece about this in The Guardian. It is very heartening news.
Yeah, it is. I've got a lot of time and respect for the people who set up FC United of Manchester, but I'm not sure why. I mean, there are lots of great clubs in non-league, and I don't see why they should necessarily feel that they are deserving of more attention than other clubs. Just, I mean, their structure is really good, and I really hope it's a success and that other clubs emulate it. But I don't think that. I think there are lots of interesting and good clubs in the non-league that deserve a bit of attention.
Right.
They're like someone who's showing you their iPhone, you know. It's like, Rocky, you're a non-league side. You didn't invent non-league football. You just happened to be a non-league side. But, you know,
that's slightly unfair, Barry. They,
I don't think so, no.
They've walked away from the most successful club and began again from scratch, and they've done very well in getting this far.
They have done very well, and hats off to them, but they seem to be... like certain other fans we've mentioned in the past, they seem to think they deserve far more attention than others.
I would say that this is completely different because it's almost like they did invent their iPhone. They're not somebody who's come along saying, I support Manchester United, see how many trophies we've won. They've gone and invented their own club and have done really well with it. In other news, though, he said, cutting you off from your right to reply, undeclared aubergine offers this eulogy. Paul the Octopus has died. He was obviously on his last legs.
It's too soon. The ink isn't even dry yet.
Are You the Farmer says, how does the pod feel about Nobby Styles selling his medals and memorabilia to fund his retirement to the tune of 2 weeks of Wayne Rooney's new wages? As a United supporter, says Are You the Farmer, part of my soul died.
I just don't think you can compare modern footballer wages to any part of real life. It'll just throw you and upset you.
Wayne Rooney missed a trick. He could have done himself a lot of PR good by buying the medals and memorabilia and giving them back to Nobby Styles.
That's true.
But he spent £25 on chicken nuggets and chips instead. Did you read that? In Dubai.
Really?
£25 on chicken nugget meal.
That's quite a bargain compared to £200 for 20 cigarettes.
Right. It's funny because he normally likes to help out pensioners, no, Barry? Isn't that what you were saying? I thought that's where we were heading, Barry. I kept serving you this up.
I've forgotten.
All right. Okay, well, there you go. Dearie me. On page 3 of your ad libs, I think.
All right. Yeah.
Right, okay, in other news, Middlesbrough, Tony Mowbray reunited with lots of his former Celtic friends there at Middlesbrough. How's that one going to play?
Isn't he reunited with a lot of players he didn't particularly want?
That might be the case. Exactly, Michael. Thank you for bringing me up on that. Players that he had at Celtic and got rid of.
Yes.
He's now going to be managing at Middlesbrough.
Indeed, which brings into question the kind of classic English structure of football management, in the sense that the manager is in charge of buying the players completely and then can get sacked and another manager comes in with players he, in this case, quite specifically didn't want at his club.
Mm. Yes. Do you think it's going to be? Do you think it's going to be a successful marriage? Mowbray, who was obviously a very successful player at the club, but as manager, how's it going to work out?
Well, he did very well at West Bromwich and had them playing good football for that division. Obviously, they weren't that successful when they got promoted. Celtic didn't work out. I think it's a good appointment.
All right. What about Paul Ince as Notts County's new manager, the 6th manager at Notts County in a little over a year?
Well, he's your friend, you tell us. You used to have tickle fights with him in Italy, in his villa.
Paul doesn't tickle fight with me anymore.
All right. Yeah.
But I'm still available, Paul. You know, you're at a loose end.
He's one of very few actual football folk we've had on this podcast.
That's true, he is, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he might be the only one, I assume. Anyway, right, well, there he is. He's in at Notts County, replacing Craig Short, who was sacked on Sunday after less than 5 months.
I don't understand why Craig Short was sacked. He was there 5 months. They were doing quite well. And did you know, actually, Craig Short runs
16th. They're only 3 points off the drop in League One. But anyway, sorry, yeah?
Craig Short runs his own sailing school on Lake Windermere. Bet you didn't know that.
All right. I didn't know that. Good luck to them.
Good luck to everybody.
Yeah. Let's hope football's the real winner and all that. Hardworking Jimbo asks, have you any idea what's behind Lazio's good start this season? We did kind of touch on this on last Monday. And if
a big eagle that won't come down from the stands.
That's pretty much it. Thanks.
Falcon.
If they get a win at Palermo on Sunday afternoon, which would be quite a big ask, then maybe we'll touch on it on next Monday again. They play at Palermo Sunday, Inter at Genoa on Friday night. Inter down in third. Milan, who are second after their Monday night win at Napoli, a very impressive win it was, with a ridiculous dive from Robinho, which sparked kind of mini brawl after he claimed that Aronica had slapped him in the face, which he really hadn't. It was quite impressive, and Robinho apparently has done enough to get a starting place in the big clash this weekend in Italy, which is Milan-Juventus on the Saturday evening. Krasic, who's been Juve's outstanding player this season, will not be of that game, as he's been suspended for two matches for taking a real dive at the weekend in the 0-0 draw at Bologna.
That's interesting.
Is it?
That unprecedented?
No, it's actually quite precedented.
All right.
Yeah, they do that.
In Serie A, do they have the same situation where the decisions aren't allowed to be reviewed if the referee has seen the incident, like we do in the Premier League? Because I'm not sure how that would work, because presumably the referee saw the incident and gave a penalty, but didn't see the dive, so I'm not sure whether that counts as seeing it or not.
He gave the penalty, but on video review, they decided there was no contact. So, yeah, I guess it is a different rule, because he did make a decision, and they're disagreeing with his decision. But no, it's been done lots of times. Well, I think 3 or 4 times. Good. That's it for part two. In part three, we'll be looking at the rest of the weekend's Premier League games. Part three. More Premier League action coming up this weekend. Chelsea, for example, the leaders, 5 points clear. They're at Blackburn. Is that a fixture they find difficult traditionally, Chelsea?
They drew there last year because Blackburn got good results against the big boys, but I don't think they've had particular problems.
They won the league there, but on at least one occasion. Certainly one occasion.
Okay.
So perhaps some happy memories.
Happy memories indeed. Blackburn, in the meantime, will arrive on the crest of a wave following the announcement of this massive £46 million takeover of the club, with estimates of up to £5 million available for a new set of boots or something in the January transfer window.
Yeah, well, it's a big Indian chicken farm or something.
Something,
and
yes.
They've obviously been attracted by Blackburn's penchant for fouls.
Woohoo!
But yeah, I don't really know much about it, to be honest.
All right, well,
presumably if Blackburn beat Chelsea, then Sam Allardyce will be one step further along his ambition to become manager of Real Madrid.
Yeah, very, very possibly.
I think he generally wants money in terms of wages, doesn't he? He doesn't traditionally spend an awful lot of money in transfer fees, but tries to get Bosmans that generally are on 60,000-70,000 a week, so maybe they should be putting that money towards the wage budget rather than transfer budget.
Well, apparently the two parties in this takeover thing have agreed terms, although the deal won't formally go through till November. It is just a bit unusual. The last chap who was going to take over, there was another Asian conglomerate that was going to take over, and the guy was, I have no debts, and I'm going to spend £100 million on players in the January transfer window. And then it turned out that he had loads of debts, were being chased by various bankruptcy proceedings, and never took the club over. This time around, they come in on almost a completely opposite pitch, saying we don't need to buy any players, we can always lease them. We don't expect to be top five of the Premier League, we'll be happy in the top 10 or 12. This a couple of statements from the group chairperson of the Venki group, which deals in chicken and pharmaceuticals.
It's kind of heartening lack of ambition, I think. Yeah, we can all identify with it.
Excellent. Rovers have 1 win in 6. Chelsea have won 4 of their last 6. Now, in the meantime, Man City, who, as I mentioned earlier, are now tied with Man United, Arsenal just behind Chelsea, are at Wolves. Now, Wolves have got absolutely rotten form. They've only taken 1 point from their last 6. But you feel they're due a result, though. I mean, they did well against United at Old Trafford in the League Cup midweek. They did well at the weekend as well. Or, you know, people say that for an away side at Stamford Bridge, they created a lot of chances. Any possibility that with Tevez out injured and flying back to Argentina, they might spring a surprise here?
Well, I think it is the kind of game that people aren't sure if Manchester City can win. I think they're quite good at home to the big boys. They were unlucky against Arsenal last week with the early sending off. And I think they played quite well, as they played quite well against Chelsea. But against the weaker sides, I'm not sure that they're attack-minded enough to get in behind and score goals. I think 3 out of 9 games so far they haven't scored in, which is a record they can't continue if they want to seek the Premier League title. But I think the most interesting thing is that Carl Henry, I believe, is back, because he served his 3-game ban against Manchester United, was the 3rd game yesterday. So him against Nigel de Jong in the centre of midfield. Oof.
Oof. Oof. And what about the fact that Tevez is out? Because what's the figure? He scores something like 70% of Man City's goals.
Yeah, and he plays in a very specific way. I mean, if they put Adebayor in there to replace him, Adebayor got a hat-trick last week in the Europa League, so he's on form, but it does mean City playing a completely different style of football when they get into the final third and probably trying to cross the ball a lot more.
Would you think Wolves playing well and losing, is that good for morale or bad for morale?
It's better than playing badly and losing, I suppose, but not as good as...
I was considering this question. I thought it was quite interesting that Wolves had played 2 very strong teams in the space of a week, at Chelsea and Manchester United, lost both narrowly, and they're generally considered to have had a good week, whereas Manchester United played 2 weak teams, in relatively weak teams, in Stoke and Wolves, won narrowly, and are considered to have had a bad week.
Mm. Is it to do with expectations, do you think?
It could be.
Mm. All right.
Wolves are the only side in the Premier League not to have kept a clean sheet as well. Good stat there.
Yeah, interesting.
Matthew Jarvis was brilliant for them on Wednesday. We always focus on the bigger teams and how their players play, but he was absolutely outstanding against Manchester United in the Carling Cup. Tore Fabio da Silva, a new one, and then Gary Neville was brought on to try and look after him and sort of proceeded to rip into him as well. So, very impressive.
I saw him a bit at Gillingham, and the Gillingham chairman at the time, actually possibly still the Gillingham chairman, Paul Scally, famously said that he would play for England by the time he was 24. And that was quite an outrageous statement for a League One player, but he's got until May to fulfil that. So.
All right.
I think his problem is the competition. I don't think England have got any world-class wingers, but they've got Lennon, Young, Johnson, Cole, Walcott, Milner, Wright, Phillips and Downing, some of whom who are playing awful football, but Capello seems to quite like Wright, Phillips and Downing for some reason.
Well, yeah. Everton are taking on Stoke. We were all intrigued by Everton's holding hands technique on free kicks last weekend.
Well, they weren't necessarily holding hands, but they were reaching out, touching each other's fingertips. Michael will probably explain it better than me.
Michael,
what they were up to.
No, I think it was fairly basic, just to keep a right distance between them. And
It was nice to see.
And they didn't concede any goals from those free kicks, so maybe it worked.
But
well,
if you're defending a free kick and you've got your hands stretched out, doesn't that imply there's a lot of space in between you?
I think that's probably the optimum amount of space, isn't it?
It's not a wall we're talking about.
No.
That would be silly.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. I'll move on then. Fulham, who have dropped down to perilously close to the bottom three, are up against Wigan, while on Sunday in Birmingham, big clash there, Aston Villa against Birmingham, Barry.
Yeah, I think I heard a stat this morning, someone saying that Alex McLeish has lost his last 7 derbies as a manager, and Gerard Houllier has won his last 7 as a manager.
Wow.
So, yeah, something's got to give, unless it doesn't give.
I think it's going to be quite tight. Both games last season were 1-0 to Villa, and both goals in those games were in the final 10 minutes. And Birmingham scored 10 goals in 9 this season. Villa have got 9 in 9, so I don't think there'll be many goals there.
But hasn't Stephen Ireland been playing like a hairy goat since?
He has been quite bad, hasn't he? Because there's a lot of people who said that Villa would get the better of that deal with Milner going the other way in £24 million. But did you say that, James?
Sounds the sort of thing. That's what I would happily trip out with. Anyway, Bolton-Liverpool. Now then, Simon, you were saying Liverpool fans might be shocked by the notion that this was an evenly balanced clash. Boltonians might feel the same way.
Well, I mean, it's just the new reality that Liverpool are facing this season. And on paper, they've got a squad plenty good enough to be going to places like Bolton fairly confident.
Really? Is it that good, their squad, do you think? Or has it just got a couple of names in it?
I think their squad is... It's not a league-winning squad. I think it's a pretty good squad, and on paper. I think they're very, very radically underperforming.
They certainly are. They did get a win. They had that draw in the Europa League away to Napoli, and then they had that win against Blackburn at home. I'm not sure. Roy Hodgson was saying they turned the corner afterwards. But I'm not sure how how much Bolton might prove a rude awakening to that idea, or whether the morale is now...
Maybe. It did seem that people were much happier after the Blackburn game than they have been. I mean, obviously, they got the result, but even before they were winning, they were putting the opposition under concerted pressure in a way that they haven't really done this season. So maybe the improvement has finally come.
I think Bolton will win that.
Oh, there you go, Barry. Why?
I just think they're a good team, play good football, and Liverpool aren't a good team and don't play good football.
I think I see your point. On Monday night, to finish off the weekend, it is Blackpool West Brom. Interesting, this Blackpool, former fairy tale side, etc., up at the top. They're now way down at the bottom. They had 4 defeats in their last 6. While West Brom are still very much living the dream, up there on the fringes of Champions League football.
It's good that we're excited about this game, 2 newly promoted teams. I don't think at the start of the season we would have identified this as a fixture of the round or of any round. But the newly promoted sides are doing quite well. Blackpool have slipped down into 14th place, but West Brom 6th and Newcastle 9th. And when you consider that they replaced Burnley, Hull and Portsmouth in the Premier League, I think the standard of competition has just gone up quite a lot since last year. I thought it was a bit of a problem last year in the Premier League in that the bottom half was very poor.
Well, we'll be looking back on that and the rest of the weekend's action when we return on Monday. A quick mention for the fact that I'm about to do one of those European paper reviews, which you'll be able to view from Friday morning on The Guardian's website. But that said, it's many thanks in the meantime to Sid Lowe in Spain and Andy, our producer, to Barry Glendening, Michael Cox of zonalmarking.net. Yeah, and to Simon Burnton, and you, the listener. Have a super weekend. We'll catch up with you after.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing service.
Hi, Sid, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
No, nothing at all. What's happened?
Oh, for goodness.
All right, okay, try that again. Sid, can you hear me?
Hello.
Ah, now I can. That's you on the phone, though. That's phone Sid.
No, this is Skype Sid, unless I'm just talking to
I can't hear anything. On the mobile. I'm not hearing anything. These headphones.
A Sid divided.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. What's that?
Yeah, but I'm now talking to you
on the phone,
on the mobile, not on the Skype.
Yeah, let's just do it on the mobile because that's bizarre.
But I can hear you through my Skype. I can hear.
Yeah, that's completely opposite of what we were looking for. We wanted to hear you on Skype.
After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Oh, okay, this should work now. Start with imposter Sid and then say...
Hang on, that's Andy ringing me now on Skype. Wait a minute, let me put my stupid headset on.
Stupid headset.
Like absolute muppet. wait a minute, hang on.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who is that, though?
I can't hear you. Hang on. Hello.
It's your computer that's not got the sound up, Sid.
I can't hear you either. I don't understand why not.
You've turned the sound down so that Mrs. Sid...
I can hear you just about, yeah.
I can hear myself come back 3 or 4 times. Can we switch off the Skype?
Can I throw away this headset now?
Yes, switch off the Skype, because this is doing my head in as well.
Or do you want me still with this stupid...
No. Just the phone, Sid. Just the phone.
Can I end the call, please?
Yeah. Just the phone.
Right, it's gone.
Okay, hurrah.
Right, you see, that was quite disconcerting, because I had this headset on. I could hear you... funnily through the headset, through the microphone, through the bloody phone at the same time, and any minute now a dog will wake up and start barking.
All right. That's Sid, all right.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me, Sid?
Yeah, have you learnt how to use a phone now?
Yeah, sorry, we're having some difficulty with it. Where's the dial that goes round really slowly? What's happened to that?
Whatever happened to those? Those are great.
Aren't they great? When you had to like dial a number with lots of 8s and 9s in, it wasn't in any way boring or really frustrating. Michael doesn't know what we're talking about, do you, Michael?
Just about.
When I was growing up, you had to ring the operator.
Highest.
And then ask for the town and the number. So
they'd
like
a jack into a hole, would they?
Anyone ringing our house would say, could have Burr 71, please. Our number was 71. That was our phone number.
All right, nice.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.